This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Experts say knowledge is power when it comes to fighting heart disease. So what do you need to know when it comes to matters of the heart, specifically its health? Here to discuss heart health and take your questions, our University of Cincinnati College of Medicine adjunct professor and Cincinnati VA Medical Center cardiologist, Dr. Laura Wexler. Good afternoon, Dr. Wexler. Thank you for being here. And adjunct professor and UC health cardiologist, Dr. Donald Wayne. Good afternoon, Dr. Wayne.
Good afternoon.
You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Wexler, how common is heart disease in this country?
It is the leading cause of death in this country, and it's highly, highly prevalent, particularly we are noticing that as treatment for heart attacks has actually improved, we now have a larger population of patients living with heart failure, which is a disease in which the heart muscle is affected, often by underlying heart attacks. So although we have made enormous advances in the prevention and treatment of patients who have heart attacks, It hasn't stopped, and we also have a lot of people living with chronic heart disease related to the results of heart attacks.
Is it something that's underdiagnosed or undiagnosed in some cases?
Yes, I think in certain populations it's underdiagnosed. There has been a lot of attention to the fact that coronary artery disease, which is the most common cause of heart attacks, has often been underdiagnosed in women. And I think the American Heart Association has spent a lot of time, money, and effort in trying to get women to understand how important risk factor modification and how important paying attention to their symptoms and being aggressive in advocating for themselves with their physicians when they develop signs or symptoms of heart disease.
Dr. Wayne, why is it that it's underdiagnosed in women? Why do you think that is?
A lot of times in women, the symptoms are not the classic kind of symptoms that people know about in terms of heart disease. So women could present with different kinds of symptoms that people don't really necessarily believe is heart-related. It's oftentimes where you'll find someone complaining of nausea or vague symptoms not related to the middle part of the chest. So a lot of times it's difficult unless you're really paying attention to the symptom complex. And women are oftentimes different in how they present than how men present. So you really have to pay attention and really listen to what the patient has to say.
Yeah, you oftentimes hear about chest pain being a sign of it. And women, they feel it in the back is what I've always heard. Is that true?
I think that if you look at 100 women with heart attacks, the majority of them will have central chest pain. But if you compare those 100 women with 100 men, they are more likely, or more of them are likely to have what are called atypical symptoms, which may just be shortness of breath, unprovoked shortness of breath, arm pain, neck pain. So while chest pain is certainly a clear indicator of possible heart trouble, women need to be aware of the fact that it can present in other locations or may just be a vague sense of lack of well-being, fatigue, shortness of breath.
Nausea is the one that – so in women it can present as being nausea.
It could be just nausea. It could be – I know that when my mother-in-law had problems with her heart, and you talked about back pain, my mother-in-law would have pain in the middle of her back. Not the typical kind of thing that you would – think that was related to the heart. So again, the symptom complex can be a little bit different. And as Dr. Wexler described, this sense of not feeling well, things seem off. Those kinds of things are the things that you really need to pay attention to.
So when you hear these descriptions, I think a lot of people may say, oh my goodness, I don't feel too well today. Am I having a heart attack? Mm-hmm. And I think particularly for women, it is very, very important to understand the degree to which you are at risk for heart disease because to some extent, our ability to predict the likelihood that you will develop heart disease is your best defense in understanding whether symptoms you develop are important or not. And I do think that there has been a tremendous effort to educate the population about risk factors for coronary disease, but sadly, many women seem to feel this doesn't apply to me, whereas it certainly doesn't. The same risk factors that apply to men, increasing their risk of heart disease, certainly apply to women. And those standard risk factors include the well-known ones, smoking, high blood pressure, elevated blood sugar, certain abnormalities of the cholesterol pattern. But the other thing is a family history. And it's very important for people to really know whether first-degree relatives have had heart disease, and if so, what it was. Because when you come to your physician to give a history, that is a very potent risk factor for whether you are at risk for heart disease. And then some of the less well-publicized risk factors include depression and stress and post-traumatic stress disorder, a history of having very traumatic events in your life. We're learning a lot more about these mind-body connections in terms of risk of heart disease.
Now, I've heard blood pressure, Dr. Wayne, called a silent killer. And is that true? Is it really silent? And are a lot of these cardiovascular ailments, are they also silent? You just don't know they're there till something bad happens, like a heart attack or a stroke?
It is a silent killer. It is something that people don't sense until an event happens. There have been changes in terms of how we look at high blood pressure and how we treat high blood pressure. And obviously, one of the things we were, you know, inclined to talk about is the new recommendations for treatment of high blood pressure. But it is the silent killer. It is something that you don't sense. And over time, it's having its effect, whether it's on your brain, on your heart, on your kidneys, so that it is there and it is something that really does affect what happens to patients.
Now, the new recommendations are from the American Heart Association and the College of Cardiologists, if I understand correctly. What are the new recommendations?
So the new recommendation is that in the past, we always used a number of 140 over 90 as the central number for blood pressure and having high blood pressure. With the last go-round of recommendations, they came up with an idea of a pre-hypertensive patient that was slightly less than that, 130 over 80. That is someone who had the propensity to go on to have high blood pressure. As we were talking on the way over, that seemed to be something that, you know, would raise the suspicion, but people really didn't do a lot about it. Now that's classified as stage one high blood pressure, and that's something that you can deal with in terms of lifestyle changes. If it continues to be elevated, though, that's when medical therapy would be initiated. So the initial thing of losing weight, limiting the amount of salt, trying to exercise, and living a more healthy lifestyle could potentially eliminate the need for blood pressure medications long term. But again, so many people have in the diet that we live in this country, so many people consume a real excessive amounts of salt, and it's very difficult to control that. There's so much salt in everything that we do eat, and you really have to have a conscious effort to try to limit that.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation, and let's talk to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Good. Yes, I had a stress test when I was 49. I'm now 56, and thought I was going to pass it with flying colors because I'm a retired gymnast, dancer, and athlete. And they called me back the next day, and I had to go see a cardiologist where I had to have a heart catheterization, and they did it through my wrist. And the doctor explained to me that what he did is he made a fist and he put his palm over his fist and tucked one of his fingers under the middle finger of the fist. And he said, one of my arteries, I guess, that go over your heart, every time my heart beat, it cuts the blood off. And he said it was totally benign. But my father died at 57 of heart disease, and so did his sister. And I'm now, I live with chest pain constantly. I'm on medicine to keep me calm, because if I get, I also have anxiety and PTSD, so I'm constantly in chest pain and don't know if I'm having a heart attack or not.
Hey, so you're worried about whether this condition your doctor described is something you should be worried about.
Well, yeah, he said it was benign, but I'm wondering, you know, it's been 9 years and I haven't been to the doctor since then. And I know I need a checkup, but I'm a single man and I don't have a wife to kick me in the butt to say, go.
So the thing that I would say would be two things. One, first off, is you want to control the risk factors so that if there is a history in the family of disease, that you try to limit the potential for you. But the second thing, and which is probably the more important thing, is that you should get follow-up and really speak with your doctor on a regular basis. Just because someone has an angiogram, the test that you describe where they put the contrast in the arteries and look at your blood vessels directly, that's an event that happens at one time. Now you're several years out from that, and disease will continue to progress if you were going to be one of those that would develop it. So I would really get continued follow-up from your doctor. And again, I would try to do the things that would limit the potential for you to develop blockage in the future. So it's really important that people continue to follow up with their healthcare provider. That is a really critical component to try to affect a change so that you are not one that goes on to have a heart attack.
So, of course, neither Dr. Wayne nor I can make a diagnosis based on your description. It sounds to me like you had a condition that we are familiar with called a myocardial bridge, which is usually benign. And the treatment is to try to make sure that your heart works efficiently and is not under strain. Having said that, I agree with Dr. Wayne. Time has passed. You do have risk factors for heart disease, and both for your own peace of mind as well as your health, this is a time to get checked out. Now, since I am a VA physician and have been there for 30 years, my question is, are you a veteran? Because if you are, you can come to the VA hospital and be taken care of. The VA has a very good program for cardiovascular prevention and testing.
Okay. Thank you both. And thank you, Tom, for the call. We appreciate it. There was an interesting point here that someone who lifts weights or does strenuous work, they deal with muscle pain on a regular basis. How do they know the difference if they're having pain in their rib cage or their chest area? How do they know the difference between whether that's something heart related or that's just because of the strenuous things they're doing?
Very difficult to know the difference with that. When people are very active in, weightlifting and things like that, what you tend to do when you lift weights is you increase the mass of the heart muscle. Could that in and of itself cause problems? Yes, it's possible. Can you do something to your chest wall or the muscles in your chest wall? That's also possible. So again, it's going to a provider that's going to look at those things and get a better understanding. It's very difficult without knowing the individual patient to really define what it is.
So we were talking about blood pressure earlier. What numbers should people know in relation to their heart health? What things should they keep track of?
In terms of your blood pressure, obviously you would like it to be less than 130 over 80. Typically, you'd like it to be with the higher number, 120 or less than that. The other thing to keep tabs on are your cholesterol numbers and keeping tabs on your weight. So it's really trying to be at an idealized weight so that you're not overweight, that your cholesterol is controlled, that your blood pressure is controlled, and that your blood sugar is controlled. You want to do all the things that you can do to try to limit the chance that you have heart problems in the future.
When we're talking about 130 over 80, 120 over 80, the top number means what and the bottom number means what?
The top number is what's called the systolic number. The bottom number is called the diastolic number.
Okay. And systolic is what? When your heart is beating?
When your heart is beating and it's ejecting blood. And then when the heart is not pumping blood to the body, that's when you'll get the diastolic or the lower number.
Okay. And those are both pressure-related numbers.
Those are pressure-related numbers.
As far as cholesterol, what's a good cholesterol number? What do doctors, especially cardiologists, what do you recommend for cholesterol numbers these days?
The recommendations regarding control of your cholesterol to some extent are affected by whether or not you have underlying heart disease. And we treat patients to some extent based on their risk factors and whether or not we know they have heart disease. So our goals are somewhat more aggressive if we have a patient who we know has coronary disease or has had a heart attack. And we like, in those instances, to be sure that the LDL, which is your bad cholesterol, that's the one that likes to glom onto your arteries, is less than 100 and probably less than 70. And the suggested limits for patients without known heart disease are somewhat less rigid. Having said that, the other change in guidelines recently was a change in the approach to cholesterol, in which it became apparent that treating to a number was occasionally misleading, and that what you really wanted to do was use appropriate doses of the available medications based on your risk factor. So that may seem like a subtle difference, but I think it meant that we know that the drugs we use to treat cholesterol have more than one effect. They have effects on lowering your cholesterol numbers, but they have other beneficial effects on the vasculature, on your blood vessels. So in general, nowadays, we treat patients with known heart disease or at high risk of heart disease with high-intensity cholesterol drugs. We treat patients who have no significant risk of heart disease but elevated cholesterol levels to more modest goals. So rather than give you a number, again, I would dance away from that and say it depends on your risk factor. So how do you know what your risk number is? Well, again, it's a question to ask your physician, but there are online apps where you can stick in your blood sugar, your cholesterol, your age, et cetera, and you can get a general idea of what your risk is of having a heart attack or a bad event in the next 10 years or so. But that assessment and calculation of your risk is now what we use to decide whether a patient should be on high-dose medications or aggressive blood pressure control.
And the medications, how effective are they?
There is no doubt that we can drive a person's cholesterol way down. We not only have powerful statin drugs, which have good, that means low side effect profiles, but there is now a new intravenous drug. The research on this drug was done in Cincinnati, so that people who have inherited huge elevations of their cholesterol level and are at very high risk can now be treated down to normal or low normal levels. So the drugs are highly effective.
Just about everybody that has high cholesterol could get their level down with a medication that's available.
Yeah.
And this is a relatively new phenomena with the injectable drugs that really makes a huge difference. The one other point is that when you deal with patients that have a known family history, that is a family history that occurs in a younger age, those people you also want to be very aggressive about treating with medications to drive the cholesterol down.
So we've got about 30 seconds here. What are some things people can do to keep their hearts healthy? I take it exercise is a big one.
Well, whenever they say the treatment of early high blood pressure, which is now defined as a blood pressure over 120, it really is effective if you exercise. Exercise is a thing everybody hates to do, but it's so effective. And you don't have to jog. You don't even have to sweat. You just have to get moving.
So just a good
just walk. Just moving for 30 mm-hmm. minutes a day, which is not a big commitment of your time. 30 minutes a day of aerobic exercise. That means your body is in motion. Walking, dancing, swimming, whatever it is that you like to do. That is one of the most important lifestyle changes. And the more we develop remote controls, the less we move. So that is, to me, the most important change many people should make.
Dr. Wexler, thank you. And Dr. Wayne, thanks.
Thank you.
College of Medicine adjunct professor and Cincinnati VA Medical Center cardiologist, Dr. Laura Wexler, and adjunct professor and UC Health cardiologist, Dr. Donald Wayne. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. The producer was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.